3, 2, 1, liftoff.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Welcome to a History of the Space Race podcast. Episode 78, Space Station Race. As the Apollo lunar landing program was coming to an end with Apollo 17 in December 1972, NASA was preparing for its next major project, the launch of Skylab, the first American space station in 1973. Skylab had its origins in something called the Apollo Applications Program. NASA began to develop plans for the Apollo Applications Program as early as 1965. This was when development of the hardware necessary for the lunar landings, that is the command module, the service module, the Saturn 1B, and the Saturn 5 rockets, were basically done. This was also a time when NASA could already see that its future budgets would be slashed significantly as the Apollo program started to wind down. As a result, NASA started looking for other uses of the hardware developed by the Apollo program, mainly uses for Earth orbital scientific applications. Although Congress might not have been willing to fund Earth orbital scientific research in the past, because it was not glamorous enough to warrant the high cost, the use of hardware from the Apollo program would bring that cost down significantly and maintain American capabilities in space at a reasonable cost. The contractors who had developed all the hardware similarly supported NASA's efforts to find continued use for the hardware so they could keep their factories and production lines running. The major focus of the Apollo Applications Program quickly turned to the construction of a space station using a spent rocket stage. The idea of using a spent rocket stage as the basis of creating a space station had been around since the early 1960s. During every Saturn 1 and Saturn 1B launch, the upper stage of those rockets, that is the Saturn 4 and the Saturn 4B respectively, would be expended and simply float around in orbit. So it was not long before some engineers thought to make use of these empty stages by converting them into space stations that astronauts could use in orbit. In November 1962, the McDonnell Douglas Company provided NASA with a study showing that the Saturn 4B rocket stage, which it conveniently manufactured for NASA, could be converted into an orbital space laboratory. The McDonnell Douglas Company's proposal introduced a wet workshop idea. The idea was called a wet workshop because the orbital laboratory would be created from a rocket stage that had previously carried fuel for some other mission. This meant that some work would have to be done on the rocket stage to convert it into a lab. Namely, any excess fuel would have to be expended and cleaned out before any astronauts could use the rocket stage. At around the same time, NASA engineers at the Manned Space Flight Center in Houston had the same idea, though they had not gotten so far as to prepare any studies or written work product. With NASA focused on the Gemini program and then the Apollo program, little attention was given to this space lab idea until 1965. When NASA started to think about a future after the Apollo program. By December 1965, George Miller, the director of the Office of Manned Spaceflight, gave official backing toward the development of an orbital laboratory under the Apollo Applications Program. The original Apollo Applications Program, developed between 1966 and July 1969, when Apollo 11 landed on the moon, was quite extensive. NASA's original plan called for converting three spent S-4B rocket stages into orbital research laboratories under a wet workshop approach. This would allow for three separate space stations, and each one would be augmented by an Apollo telescope mount to observe the sun and other stellar phenomena. Supporting these three space stations would be over two dozen Saturn 1B launches every year to carry three-man crews to the space stations. Since the spent rocket stages wouldn't have any living quarters, each crew was to sleep inside the Apollo command modules used to ferry them to the space stations. The space stations themselves would just be used as a working space for experiments. By July 1969, however, NASA significantly narrowed the scale of the Apollo Applications Program as budgetary constraints started to become more clear. Rather than establishing three separate space stations as under the original plan, NASA would launch only one. In addition, the wet workshop idea was dropped in favor of launching a dry workshop. In other words, NASA would not convert a spent rocket stage into a space station. The wet workshop idea presented numerous problems, including the need to purge the used rocket stage of any remaining fuel. Then the rocket stage would need to be converted by the astronauts before it could actually be used. Under the dry workshop plan, an S-4B rocket stage would be converted into a space station on the ground, with instruments, consumables, and experiments installed before launch. Under the dry workshop approach, the S-4B stage would be a payload rather than a rocket. This meant the space station could not be launched into orbit using a Saturn I rocket, as initially planned, since the space station would have taken the place of the Saturn I's second stage, leaving only one rocket stage, which was not enough to put a space station into orbit. Instead, NASA authorized the use of a Saturn V to launch the space station, with the space station taking the place of the Saturn V's third stage, S-4B. This decision to switch from a wet workshop to a dry workshop did make sense. When the space station idea was first considered in 1962, the Saturn V did not exist yet. NASA and McDonnell Douglas were planning based on equipment that was available to them at that time. In terms of rockets, the most powerful rocket available was the Saturn 1B, which was not able to place a full-sized space station into orbit on its own, necessitating the need to convert the Saturn 1B's second stage into the space station under the wet workshop approach. By 1969, however, the Saturn V was a proven rocket, and it simply made more sense to launch a prefabricated space station into orbit. In early 1970, NASA changed the name of the Apollo Applications Program to the name that is much more familiar to people today, Skylab. NASA was planning to launch the Skylab space station sometime in 1972. NASA would then launch three crews on Saturn 1B rockets to man Skylab. The first crew would man Skylab for 28 days, with the second and third crews manning the space station for 56 days each. NASA anticipated that the third mission to Skylab would occur sometime in 1973 or 1974. By that time, NASA would be running out of Saturn rockets, so the plan was to put Skylab into a kind of stasis mode after the third mission. The hope was that the U.S. space shuttle, then already under development, would be available to return astronauts to Skylab, and the space station could then be reactivated. Meanwhile, the Soviet Union was monitoring NASA's plans to launch Skylab with a sense of urgency. Having set its sights on launching the first space station after NASA beat them to a manned moon landing, the Soviet Union did not want to lose another race. So, with an eye to NASA's original timeline to launch Skylab in 1972, the Soviet Union rushed to launch its own space station, Salyut 1, in 1971. As I covered in episode 75, the Soviet Union managed to launch Salyut 1 after a crash program. The Salyut 1, also known as the DOS or Long Duration Orbital Station, was the result of a forced collaboration between Vasily Mishin and Vladimir Chelemy's engineering bureaus. Dmitry Ustinov, the Secretary for Defense Industries and Space, had ordered Chelemy to hand over the chassis for his own planned space station, the Almaz. Vasily Mishin was then ordered to equip the Almaz chassis with instruments developed from Soyuz, leading to the DOS. The Soviet Union succeeded in its goal to launch the world's first space station with Salyut 1 on April 19, 1971. The death of the entire crew of Soyuz 11, the first and only crew to man Salyut 1 in June 1971, however, put a damper on any attempt to claim a success. 3 months after the accident, the Soviet Union allowed Salyut 1 to burn up in the atmosphere after it became clear that they would not be able to launch another crew to the space station given all the investigation and fixes that had to be performed before launching another manned mission. As 1972 dawned, however, the Soviet Union had some hope of claiming a bit of glory. NASA announced that the launch of Skylab would no longer take place in 1972. Development problems forced NASA to delay Skylab's launch into 1973. This gave the Soviet Union another year to try to launch and operate a space station. On July 29, 1972, the Soviet Union tried to launch their second space station, the DOS-2. It was called DOS-2 rather than Salyut-2 because the space station never reached orbit. A failure in the second stage of the launch vehicle prevented that. At this point, there was quite a bit of hand-wringing about what to do in the Soviet Union. One proposal was to launch a Soyuz 7KT in a manned orbital flight. The Soyuz 7KT was a version of the Soyuz designed to ferry cosmonauts to a space station. This particular version of the Soyuz had been modified to carry two cosmonauts in full pressure suits. a requirement after losing all three cosmonauts from Soyuz 11 after an air valve opened prematurely. Because NASA was preparing to launch Apollo 17 by December 1972, however, the Soviet government vetoed the idea of simply launching a Soyuz spacecraft on a manned mission. They feared that a manned orbital launch would seem to highlight that the Soviet Union was simply far behind the United States. With the frustrations over the failure to launch a second space station building, Vasily Mishin and Vladimir Chelemy came to a deal that would come to have lasting consequences. As I mentioned in episode 75, Mishin and Chelemy were in rare agreement about one thing. Chelemy should be in charge of the Soviet Union's space station program. Mishin wanted to focus on landing cosmonauts on the moon under his modified N1L3 program, also known as the L3M, which would provide for extended missions on the lunar surface and a large space station that would support a mission to Mars in the future. Mishin thought the smaller DOS space station was simply a distraction dictated by the politicians. This was similar to the attitude that he and others held when the Soviet government forced Sergei Korolev to divert resources from development of the second-generation Soyuz spacecraft toward the Vashod. Although the Vashod missions had allowed the Soviet Union to achieve the first multi-crewed spacecraft and the first spacewalk in history just before NASA's Gemini program started manned missions, the delay in the development of the Soyuz had, in the long run, contributed to the Soviet Union's failure to achieve a circumlunar flight before Apollo 8. Meanwhile, Chelemy wanted the space station program handed back to him because, well, it was his idea. He had devoted considerable effort to the Almaz space station for the military, and the DOS space station was basically the Almaz. The only reason he hadn't been given control over the DOS was because Ustinov hated Chelemy. So, in 1972, Mishin and Chelemy came to an agreement. Mishin would transfer the future of the space station program to Chelemy after the construction of the originally ordered 4 DOS space stations were complete. This would free up Mishin's engineers to work on the L3M lunar landing project. Some engineers working for Mishin, however, viewed this as a mistake. The decision to hand the space station program over to Chelemy created a fracture within Mishin's engineering bureau that will eventually lead to Mishin's removal as chief designer and the end of the Soviet Union's lunar landing program. But I'll cover that in more depth next time, and for today, I'll stick to the space station race. In the end, 1972 closed without a space station being launched by either NASA or the Soviet Union. NASA, however, had announced its plan to launch Skylab by April 1973. NASA's announcement continued a frenzy of work in the Soviet Union to prepare to launch a space station of its own first. By early 1973, the Soviet Union actually had 2 space stations that were nearly ready for launch. One was the DOS-3, the third space station that Mishin was preparing. The other was the Almaz, that Chalamy had been working on in parallel. Ustinov probably would have ordered the launch of the DOS-3 before the Almaz, given his utter disdain for Chalamy. But this time, Secretary General Leonid Brezhnev ordered that the Almaz be launched first. This was because the Almaz was a military space station. Thus, the Almaz would become the first piloted military spacecraft in space. To hide the military nature of the spacecraft, however, Chalamy was forced to call his space station Salyut 2. This would also conceal the fact that the Soviet Union had multiple space station programs. On April 3, 1973, a UR-500 rocket launched Salyut 2, this time successfully placing the space station in orbit about a month before NASA was going to launch Skylab. Once in orbit, the fairing that protected Salyut 2 during launch came off, revealing the name Almaz still written on the side of the space station. The name change had come so late that the name Salyut 2 had only been painted on the outside of the fairing. I can also imagine that, given the level of effort Chalamy had placed into the space station and the utter lack of recognition that he received for his efforts, he was probably quietly quite satisfied that the space station secretly bore the name of his space station program. With Salyut 2 in orbit, the next step was to launch a crew to the space station with Soyuz 12. The launch of Soyuz 12 was delayed, however, due to parachute testing, and before the Soviets could complete their tests and launch Soyuz 12, Salyut 2 became inoperable. Sensors on the space station showed that the interior had lost pressure and the orbit had shifted. This suggested that something on the space station had exploded or something had struck the space station. At first, ground controllers gravitated toward the belief that a meteorite had hit the space station, but this was pretty unlikely and probably wishful thinking in an effort to avoid responsibility for failure. In all probability, Salyut 2 had been struck from debris left over from the upper stage of its own launch vehicle. This then punctured the main cabin, causing a loss of pressure and the shift in the space station's orbit. Whatever the ultimate reason for the failure, though, the conclusion was the same. Salyut 2 would not be manned. In typical Soviet fashion, the Soviet Union lied and claimed that Salyut 2 was never intended to receive cosmonauts. Despite the failure of the Almaz, the Soviet Union still had one more shot to launch a space station before Skylab. They still had the DOS-3. By now, NASA had scheduled the launch of Skylab for May 14, 1973. So the Soviet Union rushed to launch the DOS-3 before then. They managed to get the DOS-3 ready and launched on a UR-500 rocket on May 11th, just 3 days before the launch of Skylab. But once again, the Soviet Union was met with only abject failure for its efforts. After entering orbit this time, the DOS-3 began firing its attitude control thrusters without stopping. At first, the ground control team did not believe the telemetry data that they were receiving, which showed the space station was in a spin. By the time they realized that the data coming to them was correct, and they tried to stop the attitude control thrusters from firing, the space station had depleted its fuel for attitude control. Docking with this space station was now impossible. No crew would be sent up to man this space station. This time, it was much easier for the Soviet Union to hide failure. The Soviet Union did not give the space station the name Salyut after launch. So when the space station became impossible to recover, the Soviet Union simply called it Cosmos 557, suggesting it was a simple satellite. The United States did not have an easy time either trying to launch its own space station. On May 14, 1973, NASA went forward with the launch of Skylab. A Saturn V rocket successfully placed Skylab into orbit. Once in orbit, however, NASA faced a series of problems. One of two solar panels that Skylab would use for power was torn off during launch. A micrometeoroid shield was also damaged during the launch. The situation got worse when Skylab tried to deploy its one remaining solar panel in orbit. During deployment, the solar panel became caught in the damaged micrometeoroid shield and was unable to fully deploy. This led to a severe shortage of electrical power on Skylab. The loss of one solar panel and the limited power from the other was a serious problem because Skylab now lacked the power to keep the interior at an acceptable temperature. If the situation was not addressed soon, the temperature inside Skylab would rise to dangerous levels, melting plastic and key components inside the space station. In a stunning crash program, which deserves far more coverage than I'm able to provide here, NASA prepared the first Skylab crew to make repairs to the space station. On May 25, 1973, only 9 days after the launch of Skylab, a Saturn IB carried Pete Conrad, Joseph Kerwin, and Paul Weitz to the struggling space station. Conrad was the only space veteran in this crew. His last mission was as commander of Apollo 12. During their mission, also known as Skylab 2, the astronauts deployed a parasol to lower the temperature inside the space station. They were then able to cut debris away from the remaining solar panel to allow it to fully deploy. They also performed other repairs and restored the use of a space station thought to be effectively lost. A stark contrast to the Soviet Union, which was totally unable to recover either Salyut 2 or the misleadingly named Cosmos 557. The Skylab 2 crew remained in the space station for 28 days as originally planned, beating the 23-day endurance record in space set by Soyuz 11 on Salyut 1. The astronauts returned home on June 22, 1973. A month later, on July 18, 1973, NASA launched Skylab 3, the second crew for the space station. Alan Bean, also a veteran of Apollo 12, commanded the mission, and he was accompanied by Owen Garriott and Jack Luisma. They would perform a series of experiments in orbit during their 59-day stay, which set another endurance record for time in space. The crew of Skylab 3 came home on September 25, 1973. 2 days after Skylab 3 ended, on September 27th, the Soviet Union launched a manned mission of its own. Soyuz 12 carried cosmonauts Vasily Lazarev and Oleg Grigorievich into orbit for a 2-day mission. The purpose of this mission was to test out the new Soyuz 7KT, that ferry version of the Soyuz spacecraft, as well as the new Sokol spacesuits that the cosmonauts were now to wear after the loss of pressure on Soyuz 11. If you'll recall, the Soviet Union had rejected such a manned test flight back in 1972, fearing that the orbital manned flight would pale in comparison to the United States' achievements during Apollo 17. But I guess having lost the race to launch an effectively manned and crewed space station, there was really not much else to lose by launching a manned Earth orbital flight. The Soyuz 12 mission ended early after problems were detected in the life support system and the attitude control system. Despite these problems, though, Soyuz 12 represented the first piloted mission by the Soviet Union that had achieved its major objectives in 3 years. By the end of 1973, the space station race was coming to an end, at least on the American side. On November 16, 1973, NASA launched Skylab 4, the third and final crew to the Skylab space station. This crew was made up of Gerald Carr, Edward Gibson, and William Pogue. For all three of them, this would be their one and only journey to space. During their time in orbit, the three astronauts performed numerous scientific experiments on a rigorous schedule. In fact, they probably worked a bit too rigorously, and a myth was grown that this crew staged a little mutiny against NASA. The myth stems from a loss of communication with the crew during a full orbit. The crew had been so overworked that they decided only one of the three of them needed to tune in to regular briefings with mission control. During one orbit, there was either a mix-up about which of the three astronauts was supposed to tune in, or they just forgot to tune in altogether. After this incident, mission control worked with the astronauts to lighten their schedules. On December 17, 1973, while the crew of Skylab 4 was still in orbit, the Soviet Union launched Soyuz 13. Soyuz 13 was another test of the Soyuz 7KT ferry. Aboard Soyuz 13 were cosmonauts Pyotr Klimuk and Valentin Lebedev. This mission marked the first time that American astronauts and Soviet cosmonauts were in space at the same time. Soyuz 13 was a purely scientific mission. The main mission objective was to use a telescope, the same telescope that was originally installed on Salyut 1, to observe stellar phenomena that were otherwise too dark to see. Among the amazing discoveries from Soyuz 13 was the star cluster now known as Auriga. After 8 days in orbit, Soyuz 13 returned home, completing the first mission that was an unqualified success for the Soviet Union in a very long time. Meanwhile, the Skylab 4 mission came to an end on February 8, 1974, after the crew spent a record-breaking 84 days in space. This mission firmly proved that humans could live for extended periods of time in space and operate effectively with minimal harm after returning to Earth. By early 1974, the short space station race had come to an end. Technically, the Soviet Union had won the race with Salyut 1 and Soyuz 11. Though, if the goal was to establish an orbital station that could be revisited multiple times, then the United States was clearly the one who had won with Skylab and Skylab missions 2, 3, and 4. Meanwhile, the bigger race, the race to the moon, had also been won by the United States years ago. Though that did not mean the Soviet Union had given up on trying to land on the moon. As I mentioned earlier, Vasily Mishin was still working hard at this goal, and he thought the space station program was just a distraction. By the end of 1974, however, the Soviet Union's last effort to land cosmonauts on the moon will come to an end as well. And the engineering empire that Mishin inherited from his mentor, Sergei Korolev, will come crashing down. I'll talk about that and the ultimate end of the space race next time.